This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 3rd of August, 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise program, Business Live. And we are broadcasting live on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and through our internet live stream. However you are listening, the program will also be available as a podcast later on from the Sheffield Live website. Talking podcasts. Did you listen to last week's program? If not, you missed a corker. We had Ashley Martin, Michael Hudson and Felix Barr on the show. They're three members of the Sheffield Vulcans Rugby Club. So we were talking inclusive rugby. We also had Jay Biani on the program and she was giving you the latest updates on changes to employment law. So what you need to know if you're running a business or social enterprise. Plus, Tom Sutton joined us on the programme. He is from the Sheffield Chamber and he was talking about a whole range of exciting forthcoming events not to be missed. So, that was then, this is now, but if you missed last Friday's programme, then do not panic because you can catch the podcast on the Sheffield Live website. Just go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and the show is there. But as I said, that was then, this is now. Who's on today? Well, I'm really pleased to welcome Tom Hamilton from Hamilton Plant to the studio. We'll be hearing from him in just a few minutes. Also coming up, we have author, social enterprise specialist Heidi Fisher. She'll be joining us down the line. Plus, the folks from Right Tracks, the music social enterprise, will be coming into the studio later to talk about their business, how it's thriving, and the festival that they're running this weekend. But before we turn to any of our guests, what's been going on with you? What's been going on with your business or social enterprise? You probably can't have failed to have heard that interest rates rose yesterday. And the Governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, has talked about the rate rise being a realistic rise that reflects the economy now. Now, questioned about whether this rise was to give the bank a little bit of wriggle room in case of a no-deal Brexit and potential panic in March next year, he said that was not the case and that the rate rise has been implemented reflecting the state of the economy. How is the rate rise going to affect you, your business? Of course, if you're a mortgage, if you have a mortgage, around half of mortgages these days are on a fixed rate, other half are on variable rates. So if you have a variable rate mortgage, your mortgage will increase. If you rent, then there is a potential knock-on effect there. Now, if you're running a business or a social enterprise and you access finance, will the rate rise in impact on you? You can get in touch. You can let me know your thoughts on the rate rise, on its potential impact on the economy and on your business. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text 07904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And we're always interested in hearing from you, in hearing your comments, your views. Put yourself forward to be on the show as well, if you like. And we might even read out some of your texts or comments later on in the programme. So do get in touch. I think it's about time to turn to our first guest. And I'm really pleased to welcome Tom Hamilton from Hamilton Plant into the studio. Morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for coming in today.
Absolute pleasure.
So it's great to welcome you here. And your business has just celebrated its 128th anniversary or birthday.
Yes, it has. Two days ago, end of July, we hit that milestone, 128 years trading. Obviously, in that time, it's taken on very many different guises, but yes. We're still here and we're still doing well.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about the business. And I've also invited you in to talk about a really exciting project, a really exciting initiative that you're supporting, you're involved with.
That's right. It's the Bangers and Cash initiative to try and raise money for a fantastic local charity called Roundabout, which do their best to try to get young teenagers, Sheffield teenagers who are homeless, off the streets and into some kind of secure future. And I think it's just the most fantastic, worthwhile cause. And we are getting right behind it and supporting it as best we can.
brilliant. So what is Bangers and Cash?
So Bangers and Cash is an initiative that was the brainchild of a local artist called Matt Cocaine from Goo Design. He came up with the idea whereby we tried to persuade as many Sheffield businesses or other people, whoever wants to get involved as possible, to buy a car for £650 or less.
Right, yep.
And basically drive it from Sheffield to Monaco. And we have to go through various countries on the way, including France, Luxembourg, Belgium, Italy, Switzerland, and then into Monaco during four and a half day rally. Each of the cars will have it, or has had its bonnet removed and hand-painted by each individual. One has had a local Sheffield artist design, a wonderful design, and paint it onto these bonnets, and they are now currently available for everybody to view in the Winter Gardens in an exhibition. So I'd encourage anybody that can to go and have a look, get involved, see what it's all about, log on to the Bangers and Cash website, and if you can help, it would be most appreciated.
Fantastic. So it's a real display of exciting automobile memorabilia, if you like.
Absolutely.
Well, not quite memorabilia, because these are working cars.
So these are hopefully working cars. Our car is 20 years old. We've had to do a fair bit of work to it to get it roadworthy, but I'm hoping it'll make the journey. It's certainly not a done deal. I'm sure there'll be casualties along the way. I think that's half the fun. And fun is what it will be. I mean, the idea of the rally is going to be tremendous fun. There's going to be lots of business. I think there's 23 cars so far signed up.
Right.
All travelling down at the same time. And it will be tremendous fun. But at the same time, we're raising great cash for this charity, which is fantastic.
That's absolutely brilliant, Tom. So how are your mechanical skills?
Absolutely terrible. I have a vague, a general, very, very simple idea on certain things. And obviously, the older the car, generally, the easier it is. We're a team of three, and I think between us, we have very little knowledge of how to fix things if they go wrong. So we're just going to have to keep our fingers crossed that what we've already done to it will be enough.
Grand. Super. And I gather from reading about the initiative and the project that some of the other participating artists, because you talked about the decoration and the involvement of artists there, a whole range of artists, but Lisa Maltby is one of them, illustrator, and regular listeners will know she's been on the programme talking about her work. And a whole range of other artists.
Yeah, we have an artist that did our car called James Croft. We chose his design. We had a lot of options, choices to choose from. I chose James Croft's design because he's traditionally a children's book illustrator.
Right,
he does a lot of work. Apparently, at the moment, he's doing murals in some of the hospitals locally.
Yeah.
And he came up with a design that really depicts what we're actually trying to do. He was absolutely fantastic. He came and did it all in our workshops near our offices. And his design is excellent. And all these artists have done it for free. They've given up their time and energy and fantastic skills to get involved in the project, which is fantastic.
Well, that's
so
tremendous.
I think people should go and have a look.
So go and have a look in the
Winter Gardens.
Winter Gardens.
They're all hanging from the ceiling in the Winter Gardens at the moment. They'll be there for a month.
That's absolutely great, isn't it? Wonderful. Yeah. And then in September, the rally takes place.
Yes.
The journey
we have
begins.
Around 7 weeks, I think, now. And we all set off. I think we're setting off from Meadow Hall. I think I can say that. We drive down to Monaco via various stops en route.
Yeah. So, superb. Well, that'd be great fun.
It'll be fantastic fun. I'm really looking forward to getting some good relationships with some of the other teams. They're all local businesses. They're all supporting this local charity. So it's all very much about Sheffield, really.
Yeah. Grand. And Roundabout, Sheffield's youth homeless charity, works with 100, 150 young people every day, I understand. We've talked with Roundabout before. So why do you consider this to be a fantastic cause to support?
Well, you know, we all are where we are in our lives, and it can be very easy for people. Some people can be homeless and not even realise they're homeless, I think. You know, you get a teenage girl that falls out with her parents and she's sleeping on her friend's sofa. She is basically homeless at that stage.
Yeah.
And from that point, it can spiral, and it can happen to anybody, and it can happen very quickly. And, you know, we live in an age where, you know, we really don't need to have teenage kids sleeping on the streets of our city. And so, you know, if we have people out there that can help, such as myself, such as other businesses around, I don't think there can be a better, more worthwhile use of our energies. Really,
yeah.
I think it's a good cause.
And as an initiative, this is something a bit different as well, isn't it?
It is.
It's eye-catching.
Yeah, exactly. It's different. It's unique. I think it's the first I've heard of that has... It's basically an art roadshow. And so, from that point of view, it really is very different. And there is actually a silent auction. If anybody can get out there and have a look at these bonnets that are on display in the Winter Gardens, there's a silent auction going on at the moment. You can log on to the website and you can bid for these things. And some of them are really, really, really... Well, they're all fantastic, but some of them are really eye-catching. Some of them, they're really quite special. And then there will be a few saved back for an actual auction, which will happen at the Mercure Hotel after the rally's over. So...
Grand. So that's
so anybody can go and bid for one of these things and do their bit.
You could end up with a fantastic piece of artwork.
Yeah, as long as you've got somewhere you can hang a car bonnet.
Yeah, indeed. Pretty different.
Yeah, exactly. But very unique, very, very different, very interesting. Yeah.
Superb. Well, I will tweet out the link to further details about this, and there is a hashtag as well, Bangers and Cash Comp as well. So I'll tweet out the link to that, so people can find out more details as well. Sounds absolutely fantastic. Going to be great fun. Going to raise money for Roundabout. You mentioned your business just when we started the chat, Tom.
Yeah.
Hamilton Plant, 128-year-old business.
Yes.
So do you want to just sort of give me the heads up on what the business does?
What the business does now, obviously 128 years ago, it was a very different thing.
Yeah.
Nowadays, what we essentially do is we buy brand new construction equipment, heavy earth-moving equipment, and we keep it for a prescribed amount of time, typically 5-7 years, something like that. And during that time, we hire it to the construction industry and related trades, manufacturing, whoever needs to use this sort of kit to generate an income stream. And then when we've used it for the lifespan that we require it, we will also then sell it onto the second-hand open market, which generally means it will probably end up abroad somewhere to go and start a new life, and there's still plenty of life left in it at that stage. So that's in a nutshell what we do.
Yeah.
And it seems to work very well. And we're constantly renewing all our kit and having to buy every year a rolling program of renewals and disposals.
Yes.
We're growing. We're getting more and more equipment. We're getting further afield. We trade from... Well, we've got machinery in Scotland and we've got machinery in Bristol, and so we're pretty much nationwide.
Yeah.
If it's cost effective to do it.
Grand.
So we think we offer an excellent service, and we've got a lot of very, very good loyal customers. So things are okay.
Sounds good. Yeah. And with a business that serves the construction industry, I suppose you are one of the early barometers
Absolutely.
Of business confidence.
Completely, So quite often when everybody's crying into their empty pint glasses, we're thinking things aren't so bad, and vice versa.
Yes.
Because the first thing that stops when the economy goes down is people stop digging footings for new buildings to go up or whatever.
Yep.
But once that's stopped, the roofers are still going and the electricians are still going and the lawyers are still doing the deals and everything else. So, we're in a very early barometer, very early. And at the moment, things are good, things are busy.
Great. Well, I'm very glad to hear that. And I'd really love to invite you back onto the programme at a future date to talk more about the business and your experience of running the business and ups, downs, highs, lows.
Yeah.
Perhaps some tips as well for other business leaders, other business owners and so on. I think that'd be really, really interesting. We brought you on today to talk about the Bangers and Cash and Roundabout, and that's been fascinating too.
Yeah.
Now, shall we get you on before or after Monte Carlo? I think we'll get you on after this.
After Monte Carlo would be probably a bit more interesting, if we make it.
Superb. Well, practice the old tyre changes and alternator changes and all the other bits and pieces that you might have to do, I guess.
Absolutely. You might have to be Googling those on the way.
But enjoy the journey.
Thank you very much. We will. Yes, it should be great fun.
So, excellent. So, Tom Hamilton, thank you so much for joining me on the programme today.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And you're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. We'll take a break now for a track of music. Some of you, if you're my age, you might recognise this one. Some of you might not. This is Tapao, China in Your Hand.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. And we've heard earlier today from Tom Hamilton of Hamilton Plant talking about their work supporting Roundabout, Sheffield's youth homelessness programme. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, the podcast will be available later on the Sheffield Live website. But in our weekly business and social enterprise programme, we talk all things business and social enterprise success, resilience, strategy. So I'm really pleased to welcome onto the show now Heidi Fisher, social enterprise and social impact specialist and author. Heidi, good morning.
Good morning, Jamie.
Thanks
for having me.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's great to be talking with you. Can you just first start by sort of giving me the quick heads up on what you do, the kind of organizations you work with, how you do it and why?
Yep. So I work with social enterprises and social entrepreneurs to help them to look at how they can grow their social enterprises and also how they can report better on the impact and the outcomes that they achieve for the people they work with. Why do I do it? Because I've, over the last 20 years, worked a lot with social enterprises and charities and found that actually I don't really like working with more traditional businesses, because I love the fact that social entrepreneurs are trying to change things and leave a legacy in the world.
Yeah.
That's mainly why I do it. In terms of what I actually specifically do with organizations, it's partly could be training, could be mentoring with the chief execs or their boards, and also consultancy work as well.
Okay. Great. So a diverse range of work and specialisms that you offer there. Super. So you've talked about, first of all, helping social enterprises to grow, and you also talked about helping them to report their impact. So I'd like to cover both of those if we can. Let's start with the second one, if that's okay. Reporting on impact, measuring impact. You've written on your own website about reporting on impact, how to do so, how social impact report is put together, and it's something you've written about in your book as well. But I wonder if you can address the sort of thorny and sometimes difficult issue of impact measurement and reporting with a few sort of quick tips based on your expertise, because it seems it can be really difficult to measure impact in a way that is transparent, replicable, and that is even acceptable, where people actually believe the results that you're reporting on. Have they been achieved by your social enterprise, or have they been achieved by someone else? Is a double counting going on for impact? So I thought it'd be great if you can share some ideas, some expertise, some best practice when it comes to social impact measurement and reporting.
Yeah, so the first thing is all of those issues that you've just mentioned are all often used as excuses not to actually do any impact measurement and reporting. Yep. In the first place, because people just say, well, it's too difficult, it's too complicated, we're not sure if we're doing it right, and they then don't do anything at all. So my first tip is actually just get on and measure something. Because if you never measure anything, you'll never have any idea of what you're actually achieving and doing. There will always be people that will potentially criticize things and say, well, you've perhaps claimed too many outcomes there, you perhaps didn't achieve all of that. So the best thing to do is really just to do it in the best way you can, calculate it as accurately as possible, and explain how you've done the calculations and what you've claimed in terms of outcomes, so that you're justifying what you've done. If you do it methodically and justify what you've done and take a step-by-step approach to it, then you're less likely to be criticized, and it's going to be more credible and believable. The second tip I would give people is always make sure you collect data from people when they first come into contact with you, so you've got some baseline information.
Yep.
And then do a comparison and a check later on to see what progression has been actually made. Otherwise, you don't really know what's happened. If you just collect data at the end of your programs, it's very difficult for people to work out and remember what life was like before they started the program. So it's always best to have those two bits of data that you collect. And the third thing I would do is say to people is make sure that you are communicating and sharing what you found out and using it to continually improve what you're doing within your organisation. The whole point of impact measurement and reporting is not just to be glorified and use it for marketing and communications. It's very much about, well, where are we doing really well, but also where are we not doing very well, so that we can look at why we're not doing so well in that area and work out how we can improve on that area. So they're probably my top three tips around impact measurement and reporting.
Brilliant. Thanks for those. Those are really helpful. And I agree wholeheartedly. If you use an impact report to simply to try and, as a marketing exercise, people have a tendency sometimes to design poor quality surveys that are hoping to tease out good comments. You've got to look at where you need to improve, and you've got to come up with a robust framework so that you are capturing the good, the bad and the ugly, if you like.
Yes, definitely.
Great. So thank you very much for those. Can we go on to growing social enterprises, growing community enterprises and initiatives? Because you mentioned at the start of the interview that's the other thing that you help your clients to do, and whether that's through training, through mentoring, through consultancy projects or whatever. But you're helping people to grow their social enterprises. And you yourself have set up and run a variety of social enterprises and businesses and charities over the past number of years. So perhaps you can give some insights into sustainable growth, because I know for some organisations, if they start growing a little bit too quickly, that can actually lead to problems in itself. What are your sort of growth guidelines when you're working with a client?
I think there's probably not really any guidelines, but one of the things I do say to people is that growth isn't always right for every organisation. A lot of people get hung up and believe that actually they have to grow, whereas often being small and just sustaining at that level is better for them.
Yeah.
So that in terms of working with clients, is really understanding whether they actually need to grow or whether actually it's better just to sustain what they do have and just work at that scale. You know, not everyone wants to be running and operating all across the country. Some organisations just need to be local and work specifically with that client group.
Yeah.
But I suppose in terms of the way that I work with most organisations is really getting them to focus and shift away from being reliant on funding and looking at what products and services they can actually develop that will generate them an income. And it's always, you know, most organisations will always have set up with some perhaps initial seed funding or a couple of grants to get them going. And it's during that phase that they need to really be thinking about, well, what do they do once that funding's run out, and how can they create their own products or services that they can sell to people, whether those services are related to what they do. So it might be you're working with young people and you can sell something to those young people, or alternatively you might do something completely unrelated in that you might run a taxi service or a hairdresser's or a cafe or something, and that will generate income that you can then use to do your specific projects and activities that you want to do. I've just come back from a month in Thailand where I've been working with an organisation out there called Wildflower Home, which works with the survivors of domestic abuse and their children. And they're actually a great example of this, because obviously they can't generate any income from the women and children that they work with, but they've actually set up a farm. So they sell eggs on the market. They grow mushrooms, they grow vegetables, they sell fish, pigs, chickens. They also produce soaps, crafts, bags, do sewing, etc. All of that generates income, which then gets plowed back into the project and support they want to offer to the women and children. They're absolutely brilliant at it. They're quite small scale, but they've got a very diverse range of income, which a lot of organisations could learn and adopt a very similar model, because they're very focused on how they can be self-sustaining and self-sufficient.
Right, grand. So that diverse income helps support the work that they do, supporting women and children, survivors of domestic abuse. They have a number of income streams from the farm, from soap, from pigs, from chickens, from sewing as well. You said they're absolutely brilliant at what they do. You've obviously helped them. You've been out there for a month, did you say, in Thailand with Wildfire Home?
Yes, I've been out there for a month.
Yeah. And so is that an organisation that you've previously supported, you've previously worked with them, or was this the first time you've worked with this organisation and visited Thailand?
Sorry, say that again.
Was this the first time you've been out to see them in Thailand, or had you been before?
No, this is the first time I've been. So I went out specifically to help them look at their financial projections and also to look at how they can measure their impact.
Yeah. Great. So for a month-long assignment, if you like, working with them, how did you approach that? Did you spend some time sort of looking at the strengths and weaknesses of what they're currently doing, getting to understand how they're doing what they do, and then is it a case of helping them to identify complementary areas? It must have been really in depth to be there. It must have been quite emotionally involving, given the work that they do. I mean, certainly I would find it very I suppose I'd find the work that they do incredibly valuable, but I'd also find that the personal stories of the people whom they are supporting must have been quite traumatic to hear. How was the experience of being out there, and how did you approach it?
Well, for me, it's quite hard and emotional, because personally, I've been in two abusive relationships myself, so having this project to work with in Thailand, which was selected for me rather than I chose it myself, when I first found out, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be in tears most of the time when I'm out there.
Yes.
But I did manage to hold myself together whilst I was there. I suppose I've channeled that emotion into doing their impact measurement, and what I'm doing at the moment whilst I'm back here is just editing some video clips and different things to create like a little impact video for them. So that's where I've kind of channeled that emotion into creating them something that's good and will help them to promote what they're doing. But it is hard, and I think one of the hardest things for me was to really understand how domestic abuse works in Thailand, in that it's actually seen as quite acceptable by most of the population, because they see it as a family matter, and it's not something that people outside of the family should interfere in.
Do they?
So for me, that's quite a hard thing to hear and to actually try and understand, and then work out, well, how can you challenge those kind of taboos and that kind of thinking on a society level.
Goodness me. So does that have such a lot there? That's it must have been difficult, as you say, given your own direct experience as a survivor yourself.
but harnessing your anger, harnessing your emotion to support this organisation. But frustrating to see that systemic change needs to happen in a place too, if it's seems to be accepted, if domestic violence seems to be accepted as a private issue that people don't intervene within. So I suppose big question here then is, will you go back to help them again, and how will you progress supporting them? You said you're finishing off some video clips showcasing some of their work. So what next with this organisation?
So I probably wouldn't go physically back to Thailand again. There's so many other places and organisations around the world that I want to go and visit.
Yes.
But in terms of continuing to support this organisation, one of the things that I'm doing is looking at how they can improve their bid writing, because they do still raise funding as well as having all their income generating initiatives. So at the moment they're trying to raise some money to build a new home to house more women and children.
Yep.
So I'm going to be hopefully helping them with looking at how they can really demonstrate the outcomes and impact that will have.
Yes.
And also I'm trying to get some financial values in terms of what the potential savings would be to, like, the Thai government and police, etc. But it's very difficult because most of it's not reported. So in actual fact, it's if you looked at the values and the cost to perhaps the police of dealing with domestic violence, it's very, very small numbers, so it's actually meaningless to look at what they could potentially save by doing more of their work in some respects. Whereas in this country, it's very much easier to get those figures and see what the savings would be to the criminal justice system and such.
Yes.
Like. But I'm definitely going to carry on doing some bits and pieces with them, but most of that will be done remotely from here.
Yes, I understand. Well, it sounds like there are short-term, medium-term and long-term developments that will affect Wildfire Home in Thailand, your work helping them to measure impact and to further diversify their income, which is clearly that they have a variety of income streams, will be valuable in the short term, and help with bid writing in the medium term, and helping them as well to make the case for what they do and the value of what they do inside the country and to institutions to a long term and frustrating, but making steps towards the change that they need to see and we need to see. So you said that project was selected for you. So who commissioned you to go out there then, Heidi, and how did that work?
So it's an organisation called Venture with Impact.
Yeah.
They specifically pair people up who want to volunteer with organisations in different parts of the world, but with for people that have professional skills to offer, rather than some of the programs where you just go and volunteer and perhaps you're doing a bit of gardening or cleaning or a little bit of admin. This is pairing people up to go in and do specific professional pieces of consultancy and work for those organisations, which they wouldn't otherwise be able to afford.
Yes, I see. Well, what a fantastic thing to do, and to make a commitment to do on your part. I'd like to ask you, and we've only got a few minutes left, time flies when you're having such an interesting conversation, but I'd like to ask you a little bit about your book, because I picked up a copy of your book when we met at a conference in New York a month or two ago. We're both at the Social Enterprise Marks conference and had a chat there, and you gave a presentation. I think you were called upon to give a presentation with not much warning, and you did an excellent job. It was fantastic. Testament, of course, to the long-term commitment to working with social enterprises and the expertise, which also comes out within the book. A very worthwhile tome for any listener running a social enterprise that wants to thrive to pick up. So, Heidi, you can mention how people can get hold of the book in a moment or two. But before you do that, perhaps you could give the sort of book back cover summary. What's in the book? Why should people read it?
Okay. So what's in the book? Basically, everything that was in my brain about 18 months ago around social enterprise. So it's really every question that I've been asked about social enterprise up to that point in my life. And I thought the best and probably easiest thing to do is actually just to put it in a book. And it will hopefully then enable people to get all of the information that they need. So it covers a lot of things around starting up a social enterprise, things like avoiding how to get burnout, how you develop products and services.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
We're just having a fantastically interesting conversation with Heidi Fisher there, and she was talking about the contents of her book. But we seem to have lost her. Technology and telephones, eh? Heidi Fisher is a social enterprise and social impact specialist. You can find details of her at her website, makeanimpactcic.co.uk. We may or may not be able to get Heidi back on the programme. I hope we can, but if we can't, do check out her website. Do check out her book as well. Absolutely fascinating. We are going to take a quick break now for a quick track of music. This is a track chosen by Heidi. It's Girl on Fire by Alicia Keys.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. And you've just heard a fascinating interview. Well, I found it fascinating. She was fascinating. With Heidi Fisher. She's a social enterprise and social impact specialist. She's just spent a month in Thailand working with the organisation Wildflower Home. They help women and children who are survivors of domestic violence. And Heidi's been helping them to diversify the income streams that support their work. They have a farm, they sell eggs, fish, pigs, chickens. They sell soap as well. They make and sell soap. They have a sewing project. It's been really fascinating, really interesting hearing about that work with Heidi, who also, during the course of the chat, talked about and gave some tips about measuring your impact if you are a social enterprise. So if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that chat, then please don't panic, because the podcast of the programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 o'clock today. So just go to sheffieldlive.org, look up radio shows, find Business Live, and you'll be able to find and enjoy the programme. Now, I'm really pleased to welcome a regular guest back to the show, and always a pleasure to talk with Mike Thompson from Right Tracks. Mike, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Thanks so much for coming back in today. It's been a few weeks. It was about time we got you back on.
Wasn't too long ago, was it?
Indeed.
Thank you for having me on again.
So invited you back because loads going on this weekend.
We've got a busy weekend up at the Bowl Hills in Crooks. We've got our third annual community festival. So once again, we'll be up there for 8 hours Saturday afternoon from midday. So it's a free festival, loads of music. Big focus on community, so we've had some help from the Tesco Bags of Help scheme this year, which has really like bolstered the sort of infrastructure side of the festival, meaning everything's going to run a bit smoother from our side at least.
So
we're feeling good about it. We're going up there today to set up, so if people are in Crooks, come and say hello.
Come and say hi to the Right Tracks crew.
And tomorrow, we start at midday. We've got like a dedicated children's and workshop area this year as well, so that feels like it's stepping up quite a bit. But we're also inviting quite a few acts from out of town, so we've got some acts coming from like Nottingham and Manchester.
Right, grand.
Even further afield than that, some international acts playing who are doing like a small English tour. But then later in the day, we've also got we've got our after party at Plot 22.
Yep.
So continue the festivities down there.
So it's going to be a big day. Big day for you, big day for anyone who comes along. So third year of the festival up at Bowl Hill.
Yes.
It's grown, it's gotten bigger, it's gotten better, you might say, as well. And you've been able to invest in more in terms of infrastructure and support and organisation, thanks to the support of people who come along and the support of, I suppose, the Bags of Help Tesco community scheme has created some cash.
We've had support from Social Enterprise Exchange this year as well, which has eased things as an organisation. Sort of generally, we've been able to manage ourselves a little bit better. We've got our premises now in town, which we'd only really just got last year, so we're kind of making full use of that. Been doing like decorating work, making workshops down there all week to make signs and decor for the festival. But I feel like everything's definitely stepped up. We've got more decor than ever before. We've got more going on. There's going to be at least 20 stalls, hot food covering quite a few different things. I got a stall specialised in vegan food this year.
Yeah.
And we've got the Pump Up Pub again, which is like a favourite from the previous 2 years.
Right.
That giant inflatable pub serving real ales and ciders and all draft beers. So previously it's been just cans and stuff, but it's a proper bar this year.
Yeah, grand.
And it feels like it's been really nice. But the bands are great as well. We've got some really, really good live music. It's more geared towards like an outdoor festival sound. So we've got like bits of brass, like a great mixture of music from funk, jazz, sort of like dreamy indie pop, through to more like ska punk, live electronic music. It's going to be really nice.
Right, big variety, big diversity, and you've got the weather as well. Did you book that specially?
Yeah, we've always got the weather with this one.
Yeah,
I think, hopefully. It seems to be like a weekend that's been signed off, so
yeah,
we'll keep that going, yeah.
Good stuff. So, brilliant. It's going from strength to strength. You mentioned in your premises as well. So for folk who don't know, where are you based? And so, how did that come to pass?
So Right Tracks are based down on Castle Market, former Castle Market.
Yeah.
It used to be a Ladbrokes, our unit, I believe. But that's come back through the help of CADS, who are like a local social enterprise that help house and facilitate artists.
Yes.
We've been there for just over a year. We're now part of the Exchange Street Collective on the road, so we've got two other local businesses with more to join. We're hoping to turn the area into something of a creative hub, really.
Yeah.
So there's Plot 22, Bal Fashions, Delicious Clam, and hopefully a string of other local creative and digital businesses will be joining us on Castlegate.
Brilliant. So it's really turning into a thriving, new, exciting part of the city centre.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's going there should be some really interesting events down there over the next 6 to 12 months.
And you've had an interesting event there recently. Last time you were on the show, you were flagging up the Castlegate event.
Yeah, the Castlegate Street Party went really well, funded by the council, but just it felt like it was sort of a stamp of approval on what we've been doing in the area, and some official support's always nice.
Right, yeah. And what's the benefit to the council in sort of getting involved and acting as supporting this?
I think really it shows that they're supporting grassroots businesses, and there's not really any other. I guess the council can't say that they're necessarily supporting local independent artists and businesses and in that way unless they're letting these kind of events happen and facilitating them. But I think it's really important for Castlegate as an area because it has become somewhat unloved, and it breathes some colour and vibrancy into the area when it's, you know, previously been a really bustling part of Sheffield.
Yes. Yes, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then some of that vibrancy was perhaps lost, and now we're this is about bringing the love back to Castlegate.
Yeah, transition period again. So I think the it'll be exciting, really. I think the market area is going to be an interesting development over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
But we'll just keep focusing on what we're doing and hopefully building and working with local residents to try and balance the needs of what everybody in the area, really, the businesses, the artists, and figure out what the residents want from the regeneration as well.
Yeah, grand, super. Well, looking forward to hearing more about that, and looking forward to hearing how Bowl Hills goes, and should be a brilliant weekend.
Yeah.
Call to action then, come up to Crooks, come up to Bowl Hills this weekend.
Yes.
You're up there today getting ready.
Yeah, we'll be up there today. Pretty soon, actually, we're going to head up there just to get the site built and stuff. But if you want to come down and enjoy the day tomorrow, we'll be there from midday. Bands will be starting at 12:30. DJs will be starting about 1 o'clock.
Yeah,
there'll be live music. There'll be huge inflatable kids' activities and inflatable assault course for the adults. Yeah. Loads of beautiful food, ice cream, local artists selling clothes, artwork, jewellery. It should be a really nice day for everybody.
Plenty going on.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Get on up there. Well, Mike Thompson, Right Tracks, thanks so much for popping in again.
Thank you very much.
And I hope all goes really, really well. I'm sure it will.
Thank you. Have a good day. Cheers.
Brilliant. So you've been listening to Business Live, our weekly business and social enterprise programme here on Sheffield Live. And we've been talking today with an exciting range of folk. We talked with Tom Hamilton earlier on. He runs Hamilton Plant, and he was telling us all about the work that Hamilton Plant Hire are doing. Stuart Hamilton Plant Limited is their business name, trading as Hamilton Plant Hire, and they're supporting a Bangers and Cash initiative for Roundabout. Sounds great. We've also heard on the show today from Heidi Fisher, social enterprise and social impact specialist, about work she's been doing in Thailand, and with some great tips. And Mike Thompson was our final guest today from Right Tracks, talking about the Bowl Hills Festival. So my huge thanks to Mike, to Heidi, and to Tom for talking with us today. My thanks to you for listening to the programme. Thanks also to Farah helping us out in the studio today, and Sangeeta as our sound engineer. And we'll be back on air soon. Get in touch. Send me your comments on what's going on in business and social enterprise. And if you want to be on the show, get in touch. Jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Text 07904 272 200. Find me on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And we'll play out with about 1 minute of The Pretenders. And this is Brass in Pocket.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.